This is the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast for March 11th, 2014. Welcome to the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast. I'm Drew Messenger Michaels. Thanks for being here. So today I am talking to Phil Tipitoski. He is the dad, or one of the dads, of Octodad, a game that I would not shut up about back in 2010 when it first came out, and which has now seen sort of a retail redux reimagining in the form of Octodad Dadliest Catch. It's out right now on Steam, and it's about to get a big title update and also come out on PlayStation 4. So Phil took a little bit of time to talk about what's in the update, what's changing, what he and the rest of the team were maybe not so happy with in the version that was first released, what they learned from that. And also we talk a bunch about review scores and reactions in general, and also what he and the team are probably working on next that will probably not be Octodad related, right? Or what they'll work on after they finish the current Octodad thread. And the inspiration for that next project might actually be Twitch Plays Pokemon, of all things. Those of you who have not seen Twitch Plays Pokemon, it is a giant game of Pokemon being played on Twitch, controlled by chat commands to varying degrees of success, failure, and semi-organized chaos. Pretty interesting to think about what the Octodad team could do with the premise of people on Twitch having some control over the game or their presence changing something in the game. Though we do also talk about the extreme danger of people hearing that sort of germ of an idea, immediately forming a fully fledged concept of what that means, and then holding them to it forever. So don't do that, but do dream with me about what the Octodad team could do with that concept. So I described Twitch Plays Pokemon. Let me also take one moment before we get to the interview to describe Octodad for those of you who have not seen it or played it. Octodad is a game about an octopus pretending to be human. That is about as absurd as it sounds, and it's about as unwieldy as it sounds. You sort of have to control each of Octodad's tentacles come limbs individually, and that means something as simple as walking across the room can be an ordeal, and that's the fun. And it's a kind of fun that's all wrapped up in the idea of failure and disempowerment rather than empowerment, which sort of goes against the grain of what a lot of games do, from Halo to Mario to all sorts of stuff, and that puts the game in an interesting place, which I will go ahead and let Phil describe better than I probably could. So here's the interview. Thank you all for listening. Enjoy. Who's that man with the three-piece suit? Phil Tipitoski, thanks a lot for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, totally. How have things been going with the game? It's interesting because a lot of my friends who don't generally play indie games came up to me, and usually I'm the indie snob who's telling them about stuff, but they were like, have you heard about this thing Octodad? It's hilarious, you know. And I
well, that's awesome.
This is it's really cool because, you know, I was barking up the tree of getting everyone to play the original game back right when it came out, but there's something about this one that's caught people's imaginations. So how's it been going? Are you happy with how it's been received?
Yeah, it's been really awesome so far. I mean, sales are going well, and fan reception has been like phenomenal, at least for us. And I don't know, we're doing good. We've just been kind of working on, you know, figuring out what we're doing next and fixing bugs and getting ready for the PS4 release, stuff like that. Critical reception was pretty mixed. It was kind of all over the place. Like, some places we got 90s and then other places we got like 40s. So it seemed to be pretty polarizing, which I guess I can't say I didn't expect, but it's been interesting.
A game like Octodad, and particularly, I mean, like the full-length one, Dadliest Catch, right, is a good example of what's wrong with review scores, I think, you know, because it's like something like Octodad that's really interesting and polarizing ends up with roughly the same score as something really safe and mediocre, you know, and merely acceptable.
I don't know. I like a lot of, like, I like the reviews that don't have scores and they just kind of, you know, explain what they enjoyed and didn't enjoy and whatever. Those are perfectly fine. But it's weird with scored ones because, like, someone will talk for, like, 3 out of 4 of their paragraphs or something about how they loved it, And then they'll be like, but these things I didn't like. And then it's like 40 out of 100. And it's like, I don't see how the writing actually correlates with the score there. But, oh well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's interesting. So who was it who just started using review scores again? Not to turn this whole thing into a discussion of review scores, but I think it's interesting. It was Killscreen, right? They claimed the Duke Nukem Forever destroyed their ability to score things, and then recently they decided they had to do it again. And I don't know. Their original piece when they first launched about why they were going to use scores I thought was pretty compelling, but their thing about why they put them back seemed kind of disingenuous to me, right? Because it isn't about preservation or whatever the way they were talking about, it's about getting noticed by Metacritic and the people who care about Metacritic, right? Like it's because we've entered into a world of online discourse that really values things like scores, you know, whether or not they have any noticeable connection to the text, as you say. I guess I bring it up because, again, something like Octodad is something that's pretty difficult to, you know, like, what do you apply to fun factor, right? Because it isn't trying to be a Mario game, right?
It's not like a power fantasy or something like that, so.
Yeah, it's not, well, it's a disempowerment fantasy, and it's also where a lot of games aspire to, like, tight control. Octodad is, you know, it's one of these kind of, it's become a genre, I guess, in the last couple of years, but it's a game where the difficulty or the failure of the interface or the player's designed failure with the interface is part of the comedy, right? Like Surgeon Simulator, like Quap.
Right. Yeah, there are some folks who just don't get it. Like, it goes right over their heads and they just are just like, this is really hard. I don't understand why anyone would play this. And that's fine. Because, like, I don't know, with a comedy game, if you're having, like, a particularly bad day, it can kind of color that whole experience, and it's hard to have fun with something like that when you're already having a hard time otherwise.
Definitely. Well, I know some of the review scores that I thought were substantive that are not review scores, but reviews that seemed to have interesting objections to the game were that the back half, where without spoiling anything, the stakes are raised in the story and there's stealth, which makes all the thematic sense in the world, given that the game is about somebody hiding who he is and all that. Right. But I think some people, I don't know, the impression I got, nobody explicitly said this, was that they felt less comfortable failing, whereas when Octodad goes to the supermarket and knocks over all the cereal boxes, that's, you can enjoy that failure or that frustration or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's also just because we set the precedents for, you know, because it's like showing off at like PAX and stuff for years, we were only able to show off like the first two levels, maybe three levels, which were all the very normal, what you would expect of Octodad levels. And then I think people dove into Deadliest Catch, and then they get past that and they start running into stuff where it gets a little bit more difficult or things get, you know, it changes up. And I think we might have taken them by surprise in a bad way. And it's not all just because of like, oh, people are misperceiving it or like not perceiving it well or whatever. It's also very much on us in that we wanted to get the game out the door. Because we've been working on it already for, you know, 2.5 years with no budget whatsoever besides our own money, working other jobs, and, you know, some of the Kickstarter money. But, you know, $24,000 doesn't stretch 2.5 years for like 8 or 9 people. So it's partially on us just for not having tested and played the second half of the game as much as we played the first half. But it's also just in that some of the challenges later on aren't as centered on like being a normal father, I guess, as some of the other ones, or at least in the sense of like, there's no real way you can fail, or at least it's very hard to fail those first three levels, but like the challenge isn't just actually progressing. Whereas the latter half or the latter third or however you want to define it, has more situations in which you can fail. And it's not always as funny as it is early on.
Yeah, I think the only places I failed or died in the first three levels were the bosses, right? With Fujimori chasing me in the supermarket, I died a couple of times until I figured out that you had to take long strides and stuff. And then it felt so good, you know, like it was a great victory. It was almost this like Dark Soulsian moment of like, you know, I figured
suddenly
out
you get
systemically.
It.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a light bulb. It was good.
Yeah, I think we expected people to learn that like faster than most do. And so, you know, 2.5 hours, you know, you get like an hour and a half in, and maybe they're not as good as we need them to be for some of those later levels, or at least for some people. Other people like fly through the game and beat it in like an hour and a half, and then they're like, why is this so short and easy? So it's really hard to gauge.
And in fact, if you look at the Steam Workshop page, which, by the way, you were very smart to launch, a huge number of the things people have made are like super hard challenge stages. You know, they're right. Like the Grandmaster Galaxy of Octodad or whatever.
Exactly.
Which is interesting, because that's pretty antithetical to what I thought the game was about until I played Deadliest Catch. You know, I thought it was about mundane situations and failure and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, there's more to it than that, obviously.
Yeah, it's partially just because we got really good at the game for, you know, playing it for years, and then just we figured people would want harder things to do later on because they would have gotten good at the game, and we didn't want them to get bored of doing these normal things when, you know, because when you do get good at it, you can fly through those things really fast. Like, we can beat the whole game in around half an hour, at least in the office.
Yeah, I talked to the guys at Ace Team one time, right when Rock of Ages came out, and they were talking about how the biggest mistake they made was not, as you say, not having enough people from outside of their team play it, because they understood how to use stuff together, you know, right. in a way that it was not tutorialized explicitly or implicitly.
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of outside testing with students from DePaul, which is where we're all graduates from. And then we took it to a couple like gaming cafes and lounges around here in Chicago, but eventually you kind of run out of people after testing for so many years. And so I think we didn't get to reach out to as many people as we'd like to. And we obviously couldn't really hire, a QA team or like a set up playtesting where we could pay people. But it's also in just like, we wanted to get it out. I mean, maybe it would have been better if we sat and just played the game for 3 months and like fixed little things, but maybe not. We can't really know, but we're trying now, and we're in the near future probably going to push some updates that are kind of significant changes to some of the levels. Most of them are just kind of like fixes, things that were kind of glaring but we didn't have time, or, you know, kind of slipped by while we were worrying about everything else. So we'll see how people react to those.
Is that stuff that you were working on for the PS4 release and are going to roll to PC as well, or was that sort of was the first focus to fix what you released and then you're rolling that into the PS4? Maybe that's a meaningless distinction now that I say it out loud. But.
No, I mean it's kind of the latter. In that we read like everything about the game that we can consume. We even though some of the reviews kind of hurt to read sometimes, and it sucks to hear the same stuff over and over again, we kind of force ourselves to go through that so that we can learn from it, and then react and hopefully fix things the best we can without, you know, completely changing the game. So we're doing our best to improve the experience and just make it a little bit less frustrating, a little bit easier for some of the people who were having a hard time, but also try to leave in the harder routes to get through levels or beat things quickly for speedrunners and people who like to do challenging stuff. So we'll see how it goes, but it'll be also part of the PS4 version.
So once the PS4 version is out, you said right at the top you're trying to figure out what's next. Is that a total black box? Are you planning to iterate on Octodad some more? Are you gonna?
We've been thinking that we'll probably do some more Octodad stuff in the short term, though I'm not sure what it will be yet. But we've thrown around a lot of ideas as far as additional content goes, whether it be like skins or story content or what. But then, you know, we've at least in the beginning stages started talking about what the next game, like next big project would be. And I think it's going to be very different, just because that's been our goal from the beginning, is to do things that are just very different from either what we've done before or what anyone else has done. Because that was kind of the whole point of Octodad 1, was to just make something that no one had ever made before, and, you know, wasn't Space Marines and wasn't a platformer and wasn't a puzzle game, at least in the traditional sense. So I think we're going to take the same approach for the next big project.
So not Space Marines is interesting in a bunch of ways, right? There's a couple of aspects, I think, to the resistance to the Space Marine tropes, right? One is just that there's too much of it, right? Like, we've reached saturation point. How many more Marcus Phoenixes and not Marcus Phoenixes can we deal with? And then the other thing is what you mentioned at the top, which is power fantasies, how there can be something a little facile about with all the things games can communicate and all the ways they have of communicating, only ever communicating, you're awesome, you're Kratos, kill this thing. Maybe it's too early to say, but for your next project, are you still interested in those lines, sort of expressing things other than power, or is it not even that concrete in your head yet? Or are you simply interested in making something new, whatever that means?
I think it's just new, whatever that might mean. Though it's also just that, you know, people, a lot of developers, the bigger developers, do those types of games really well, and I don't think we could compete with them with like our resources. I mean, like, people on the team love, you know, Halo and Call of Duty and stuff like that. So like, we have nothing against those games necessarily, but I don't know if we would have as much fun working on something like that as we would working on something really weird and new. And we obviously can't meet the production values required to compete with some of those types of games.
Sure. I mean, and that's a pattern that repeats across all media. You know, like, Hollywood got interesting when independent film producers started making stuff that was nothing like Hollywood blockbusters, but was interesting and could compete economically. So, you know, everybody makes everybody step up their game. That's you know, that's a pretty much a known quantity. Yeah, and there. I mean, I suppose there are a few indie developers who are trying to compete in, like, the competitive shooter arena, but even then they put an interesting spin on it generally. You know, it ends up being something like Natural Selection 2 or something like that.
Yeah, if we were to do a shooter game, it would have to be like a very unique one in some way or another. We've been throwing around ideas, or at least been talking a lot about, you know, how Twitch and YouTube has become really, really popular for games press in a less traditional way than, you know, just like writing up an article or whatever, like Let's Players and stuff, and streaming. And we've been trying to think of like how to take advantage of that, or at least how to do something cool with that. As far as maybe crowdsourcing, like what's going on in your environment while you're playing, and affecting what's going on with maybe a streamer's game while they're playing based on how many people are watching and that sort of stuff, and giving people an outlet of control, even if it's small. I don't know if we'll be able to create the infrastructure for something like that, but we've been passing it around quite a bit, so we'll see.
That's a really neat idea. And I'm glad you brought it up, because actually I was speaking to a friend recently, and both of us realized we'd been watching Twitch Plays Pokemon more often than we'd been watching the Olympics. So,
well, I'd argue that Twitch Plays Pokemon coverage is with less of a delay than the Olympics, and with more accurate coverage. So
that's true, and there's fewer possible human rights abuses and all sorts of advantages. But I was reminded immediately of Octodad when I watched Twitch Plays Pokemon. Just in the fact, like, my favorite part of the entire project has been when it took them 8 hours to cut down a tree. Like, that, it was very Octodad, right? It was like, yeah. It was interesting. And, you know, you talk about, you know, if you guys made a shooter, right, the first thing that popped into my head was like a combination of Surgeon Simulator and Receiver, right? Like, you have to operate each individual finger or whatever. And obviously, Receiver's awesome. It's such a good game. But it's, you know, it's frustrating in all the right ways, you know. And it's, I love Magicka for that same reason, by the way. The idea that a system should be arcane, and the fact that it's not really clear how the magic works, and you just kind of have to remember combinations, and even when it's not totally successful, I think it's, I mean, Receiver's probably an overall more successful version of that idea, but in any case. All of that to say, there's a lot of potential in what you guys already do for that idea, but it also... And on the other hand, you've got jerks like me who are immediately like, yeah, it would be just like Octodad. And I don't mean to put you in that position.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. A bunch of people have suggested, like, Twitch Plays Octodad, and we're like, this would be impossible.
No. Even the co-op is already, you know what? I played the co-op with a friend, and we immediately thought about, you know, that Steve Martin movie, All of Me. It was exactly like that. Like, with just like total lack of control of a body and argument and negotiation in a great way.
Yeah, well, I mean, anytime a lot of us play those types of games, like Four Swords or whatever, we end up like throwing each other in the lava. Or I think that's kind of all of our attitudes in playing a lot of those types of games, is just kind of trolling each other. So I guess that the Octodad co-op lives out that fantasy as well, just being able to like pull him in different directions and screw up what other someone else is doing and cause chaos.
I'm pro chaos. I think, well, so if I had to sum up in a couple of words what the indie space offers that the AAA space either can't economically or is sometimes afraid to or just maybe isn't as good at, one thing would be chaos, the other thing would be just sheer novelty. And then there would be, you know, the thing we were talking about, the expressing of different points of view than just you are a badass space marine, shoot the thing. You know, and again, I love shooting the thing, right? I'm not hating on that stuff either. I just think it's interesting when other things can happen, because, of course, there's a lot of space for that. Cool. So, so what have you been playing lately? Have you had any time to... Yeah, if you think that you're tired of Skype causing problems on this podcast, you have no idea how tired of it I am. Hey again.
Sorry, my Skype cut out too for some reason, like it just signed off.
The issue, in my humble opinion, is that Skype has been getting steadily worse since Microsoft acquired it. But
yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes if that's my paranoia or like, you know, just not liking the man or whatever. But I think actually, in fact, it's, yeah, anyway.
Oh, yeah, I think they're going to bring the quality down until they can basically start charging for, you know, the real service. And then everyone will switch to something else, so...
Yeah. It's the freemium thing, right? You can, yeah. you can not pay for the thing that's, because the other thing is like just the interface used to be so clean, and now as I'm talking to you, yeah, I see one Xbox One ad and another Captain America: The Winter Soldier ad, and yeah, wedge, mm-hmm. You know, your face is wedged between those two things, or your avatar is. Anyway, so I was gonna ask before we got dropped, have you had time to play anything lately? Or have you totally been switched into getting stuff fixed and getting the PS4 version out?
I mean, I've mostly been playing Octodad on PS4, just testing stuff. But what else? I play Threes on my phone a lot, and I played Tomb Raider a few weeks ago, day one.
Yeah, Tomb Raider's a great example of the other side of the coin we've been talking about, right? Because that's a game that's terrified that you're going to play it wrong. You know,
right.
it's
very directed experience.
Yeah, which, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, of course.
No.
It is interesting, you know, because there are moments, at least, where it's kind of like, well, why'd you even make a game? Like, you could have...
Why isn't this a movie? Yeah,
right, yeah, you could have just shown it to me. Anyway, cool.
Oh, I played... I started playing Outlast on PS4 because that was the PlayStation Plus game.
How is that? I've been out of the PlayStation loop for a while, so I have not had the pleasure.
I only played it for maybe 40 minutes and got to the first couple of scares, which made me jump, and then my dogs jumped and like ran around the house barking. but it seems pretty good so far and interesting, mysterious. But it's definitely just seems to be a game about like jump scares and a little bit about atmosphere, which is kind of the opposite of something like Amnesia.
Sure, yeah, which is 90% atmosphere and
right.
Yeah.
Which I prefer that sort of thing, the atmosphere sort of thing, which is why I also like a lot of like Japanese horror films over American ones. Because ours tend to be, you know, like gore, blood, violence, and theirs tend to be entirely like mentally based.
Yeah, totally. They're very cognizant of the fact that nothing they can show you is going to be as awful as what you can just imagine on your own.
Right.
Which, I mean, you know, even not to make it totally East-West, right? Like, even our older horror movies, like Alfred Hitchcock stuff, is very much about, what was his old credo? That there's you know, a gun going off doesn't do anything for you. It's waiting for the gun to go off.
Right, the tension.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. Hey, the Amnesia games are a really good example of that, I think. And Japanese games, right? You were talking about horror films, but, you know, the Silent Hill 2 is probably the gold standard for...
Right.
Atmosphere-based, you know, nothing is necessarily even happening, but it's terrifying.
Even the older Resident Evil games, like 2,
for sure.
Of my favorites.
Yeah, so it's interesting, because, you know, you've been playing a couple of things, which is great. Threes is really good, by the way. My Twitter feed has exploded with information about Threes. And all that. And so you've been playing some stuff, which is good. I do get the sense from you, and tell me if I'm reading too much into your tone or whatever, that you're feeling a little bit ground down by this process. And this is a pattern I've noticed in a lot of people who've released games semi-recently and are currently fixing stuff. And I wonder how much of that is maybe almost a postpartum depression thing, and how much of it is just the grind of getting everything fixed. But it's a noticeable psychological condition, and it's usually both preceded and followed by extreme happiness.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. A lot of people told me that we'd feel like really bad, but I think we've all been kind of pretty okay. I don't know. Most of us are pretty happy with where we're at. I'm kind of melancholy all the time, so I just sound this way. Even if I'm happy or not, like, it's not always discernible from the outside. But I don't know. It's like we've just been bogged down with like support emails and stuff like that. Like earlier in the week, we realized that a bunch of them were going to the wrong address, so like all of a sudden I had this heap of like 600 emails I had to answer.
Oh man.
Which is fixed now and handled and everything, and it wasn't as big of a deal as it seemed like at the time, but just stuff like that is what we're doing. So it's not the fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
like the fun part of making games is like very beginning, early on when you're just like thinking of weird and crazy ideas and you get to like try them out and see if they work. And, like the discovery part of it, I think, is the most fun. And then, you know, you start to get into implementing them and it's like, oh, cool, things are looking good now. And then the last, like, I don't know, quarter or third of development is just like fixing things and finishing. And the reward at the end is awesome, but that last bit is really tiring because it's all stuff that's just kind of tedious. And now we're just at the point where it's like, I can't wait to get to when we can do something completely different. Just because we've been looking at this octopus for, you know, however many years. Sure. And it's still awesome and we still love it, but it's just like when you're doing something for this long, it can get tiring.
Well, I imagine, I mean, I guess to bring it back to the reviews and the reaction there too, you know, since that's what we started with, it can make it feel like an extra sort of gut punch if somebody doesn't like it and it's a thing you've devoted your time to and it's something you're going to have to spend more time with, like you still have the last mile ahead of you.
Right. It's weird because you know beforehand that, you know, there's going to be a good amount of people who, like, despise it, and then there's going to be also hopefully a good amount of people who love it, and then there'll be some people who are indifferent. But even being prepared and knowing that ahead of time doesn't actually prepare you for it, because it still hurts every time you read something that's, like, negative. Though some negative stuff I really appreciate. Like, I liked Rock, Paper, Shotgun's review a lot just because it was, like, solid criticism that is actually helpful. And that was one of the, you know, they don't do scores or anything like that. So that kind of stuff I appreciate because, you know, that's the stuff we want and need in order to make better games.
Yeah, and I mean, Rock, Paper, Shotgun's review was, I mean, it actually touched on a lot of the same things we've been touching on as far as how the back half is different from the front half and things like that. How things right. change after the aquarium, I guess that's not a spoiler because it means nothing if you haven't played it, right? The other thing, I suppose, is I don't know how significant the changes you're planning to push are, but there are certain games where it almost makes no sense to use the reviews that came out on release day. This is another way that reviews have gotten strange, right? To use those reviews as a barometer for how the game ended up, because things change pretty significantly, right? Like, Hydrophobia is kind of the classic example of that. Like, it launched and it was a mess, and then they changed it and changed it and changed it, and it's still kind of a mess, but it's definitely a different kind of mess than when it started. So do you review it again? Yeah. What do you do? And then MMOs, I guess, are the other classic thing, right? Like, does it make sense to read a review of World of Warcraft when it came out and use that to figure out whether you'd like it today, right? It probably doesn't mean much as far as that experience.
Yeah, I don't know. We, going into it, aren't expecting any changes, like, in scores or anything. Some people might update them, and I guess we'll have our PS4-only reviews that would be affected. But it's really just to make the game a better experience for any new players who come in and anyone who wants to replay the game. So, like, as far as, like, the level of change that's happening, I can tell you that, like, so in the grocery store, there's Soda City, that really tall tower you have to climb to get the orange soda. So right now, it's, you know, like, in the middle of that aisle, and the camera, like, pans around it and flips 180 if you go under it and stuff, and it's kind of, at least from a camera perspective and from, like, a perspective of someone who's just starting to play this game and is only in the third area, it's kind of a pain in the ass to climb up, which is, you know, the point of the game, but also we've never, up until that point, really taught people to climb. And so it's kind of a spike in difficulty, and just, like, in the presentation of it, just the usability of that challenge is kind of is just bad. And we kind of had an idea of that, but, and kept saying, oh yeah, we'll fix that, and then just kind of never got around to it while we were busy with other stuff. And so now Soda City is turned sideways and pushed up against the wall so that you have a normal aisle camera that doesn't spin around and doesn't do 180s and doesn't, you know, you have, like, a constant view that's always showing Octodad from, like, a fixed angle, and it makes a lot more sense and you're not disoriented. And you can then use the wall to also be, like, up against while climbing up it, so you're not trying to, like, not fall off one side. And it just makes it feel so much better than it did before. So some stuff like that is getting changed. And then later on, we're also adding some some content and taking away some difficult parts that really aren't necessary and don't add to it in any positive way. With some of the stealth sections.
So you're still climbing in Soda City, but it's your. Soda City was my first bottleneck, you know, just as a data point. I got through it. I powered through it. I banged my head against that wall and I got it done. But it was definitely a little bit intense. And so you're climbing, but it's more from like an almost pseudo 2D or Qbert-ish perspective where you're against a wall. I can see how that would be significantly easier. Yeah.
I mean, it's also because people up until that point have just been able to, you know, smash through things and not really worry too much about like how careful they're being. And with climbing, you have to be patient. And it's not about like getting up there as fast as you can or just like throwing your arms around and legs around all over the place. It's more about like, oh, if I hold down the button for my right leg and if I just keep holding it, his leg will just stay up in the air. And then I can slowly move it over and let go. And once I drop it, it'll stay there and I can move the other leg. And I don't think people always realize that early on. And it's a major blocking point, like you said, for them getting up that while the camera is also fighting them from like all angles.
Yeah, totally. So that sounds like a market improvement, and I will look forward to playing it again. I will say, though, and I feel like I need to say this, I will take something like the original Soda City over a 20-minute Force tutorial any day of the week, right? Like, that extreme is a million times better to me. And I already mentioned Dark Souls in this interview. I probably mentioned it too much. But, that to me, I'll take that approach over, you know, press A to jump kind of thing.
Yeah, that's been an interesting part of this, too, is just, like, making sure that we're not dumbing it down, really, and instead just kind of improving it and making it the way it should have been in the first place. So we're definitely being very wary of that and not making it, like, a...
Yeah, even though there is potential for some hilarity there, you know, where if there were a tutorial about how to pour milk. Oh, Skype, what have they done to you? You were so young, so full of promise, your interface so clean, your connections so consistent. Ish.
Apparently our router hates me or something.
That's fine. Thank you for rolling with the punches as far as connection. I won't take up much more of your time. I just had one last question. The stuff about difficulty spikes, to me, dovetails kind of nicely with the stuff about what I think is about 10 seconds from becoming a genre, which is this, you know, people watching on Twitch can influence the game kind of stuff. Because, you know, what if, in addition to sort of testing and iterating and having people try it, and, you know, maybe that happens out in the wild or in beta or in early access or when the game's released or whatever, what if people watching on Twitch could then do something, either to help or to hinder? It's the internet, so probably mostly hinder. But, you know, like, I feel like that's maybe where we're headed. I don't know. It's an interesting thought, and I'm really excited to see what you do with it. But I'm not sure if those were the lines you were thinking along, or if you're just sort of interested in the technology and going to see where it takes you.
I mean, I'm sure we would experiment in more ways than just that, but that is definitely part of it. The sort of like having multiple dungeon masters for whatever you're doing, in a way, like they're molding your experience and either making it harder or easier, or maybe they're, you know, having some sort of status effect on it. Whether it's based on like input from them or just like how many people are watching, maybe you need to have more people watching your stream to do certain missions or something in some game. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing things out there.
Yeah, no, totally. Totally. It's like a 20 person audience instance or whatever.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. No, that'd be really interesting because there are games where the dungeon master is a player. There's like Jason Rohrer's Sleep is Death, or there's that game Crawl that just got announced where it's a roguelike and somebody controls the monsters or whatever. But the idea of multiple dungeon masters is pretty interesting because it's usually a one-to-many relationship with the one being the dungeon master, and sort of to reverse that dynamic has a lot of potential as a concept.
Right. You could do a lot of stuff or even with like hidden information to where your viewers can see certain things, but you can't. That sort of stuff.
All right. Well, I know you're just spitballing, but just so you know, anyone who hears this will hold you to that precise idea forever. So.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. People do, like, on Twitter and stuff, like, when people ask, like, when's the game coming out? And we're like, probably around this time. And then, like, maybe that changes or whatever. And they're like, but you said it was coming out at this time. And then it all of a sudden is news that, you know, the game is delayed, even though we never had a concrete date.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You can't really tell anybody anything until it's first, like, absolutely certain, or at least as certain as you can be, because they take it very seriously.
Right.
Video games.
You've almost got to take the Edmund McMillen approach and just, you know, it's out when it's out.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you again for your time. I really, really appreciate it. There is obviously a lot else to talk about, but a lot of it's been covered elsewhere, right? Like that one, I think it was Polygon, covered the whole idea of imposter syndrome and Octodad and all that stuff. I'll link to that article. But that's all been covered. So I think it was good to cover some new ground, you know, what you guys are working on and all of that. Young Horses is staying a thing, right? Like you're staying the team you are now and doing something new together, as far as I understand.
Yeah, until we go bankrupt.
Yeah, well,
that is the plan.
Hopefully, that's a long, 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 long time. Because you're a really talented group. Everything about it, like the design and the voice acting and the Foley work, like all of the sound design is crazy good. So you know, I want to see more from you. I would play 7 more Octodad games, but I'm also incredibly excited to see whatever else you come up with, Twitch related or not. So best of luck with everything, and thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
That's that. Thank you very much for listening. If you like what we do and would like to hear a lot more of it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbay, our newest episodes, or some random sampling of episodes. You can also find on SoundCloud. And of course, you can subscribe using good old-fashioned RSS. By the way, congratulations to friend and collaborator Adam Osborne of Auburn, Alabama, for correctly guessing the microwave combination that we alluded to in episode 8. Do enjoy your Drew and Lucio doppelgangers, although I think Legal has informed us that they are technically golems. So I'm sorry, enjoy your Drew and Lucio miniature golems. And best of luck cleaning the potato starch out of your carpet, as I am sure it is simply everywhere. Thanks, everybody. Do check out the blog at etao.wordpress.com.
In hot pursuit, in a speedboat, and there's a chef with them.